Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Classes of Male. My name is Alan Gygax, and this is episode number 101. Dude, we are cruising along. That is so cool. I cannot tell you how honored I was to have James Henry on for episode 100. What an amazing guest. And then we were able to chat a little bit after the episode. And, you know, all the experience I've had with him has just been a top notch. What a good dude. You hear again and again integrity that's used with him. And I know I brought it up in the interview, but man, that is, it's who he is. You know, what you hear on that, that's been my experience very consistently. And that's what I hear from people who know him well. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. Also, the Concerned Letter Carriers now have merch. So I know at the convention, I got to wear one of those CLC, the black t-shirt that had the lion on the back, and they were very popular. And so those are now available. If you want to go to the Concerned Letter Carriers website and get yourself a shirt, a hoodie, a hat, stuff like that, that is now available for purchase. And of course, that helps to fund the campaign for the Concerned Letter Carriers. All right. With all that behind me, now we get to this part of the Constitution that I am the most interested in, which is the Constitution for the government of subordinate and federal branches. So this is your local branch. These are the laws at the national level that govern how your branch is supposed to run. And more importantly for me, how my branch is supposed to run. Preamble. For the purpose of effecting uniformity in the administration of its privileges, honors, and benefits, the National Association of Letter Carriers, in convention, ordains the following constitution for the government of branches under its jurisdiction. Article 1. Name and object. Section 1. This branch shall be known as blank branch number blank of the National Association of Letter Carriers of the United States of America. Section 2. The objects of this branch are to unite all employees who are eligible for membership under Article 2, Section 2 of the National Constitution into one harmonious body for their mutual benefit, and to assist the National Association of Letter Carriers in its efforts to improve the condition of its entire membership. You know, Section 1 that has the branch name, that it's just the number. My branch is Branch 2502. I noticed at the convention that some branches have these cool nicknames. Like, a lot of them were named after people, and I'm not a big fan of that. But there were some that was like I think in Montana, there was the Big Sky Branch. I know in Pennsylvania, there was a Keystone Branch. And in Florida, there was the Space Coast Branch. And there were some really cool names. There was like the Lehigh Valley Branch and all this stuff. And so I'm kicking around ideas for what we can have as a cool nickname for Branch 2502. And I'll let you know when and if that becomes a thing. All right, anyway, Article 2, Membership. Section 1, application for membership must be made in writing, signed by the applicant, stating age, social security number, place of residence, and such other information as may be determined by the branch. A Form 1187 dues checkoff must be signed by all applicants seeking membership in the branch and the NALC. Section 2. Any regular branch member on tendering a written resignation of membership and paying all fines, assessments, and dues shall receive from the secretary a certificate thereto. Such certificate shall be proof of good standing at the time of resignation. Section 3. A. Any regular branch member in good standing in their branch, moving their employment to another city, or retiree in good standing in their branch, moving to another city, may transfer membership to the branch located in such city. Oh, there you go. If you're a part of the NALC, anywhere you go, you stay in the union. B. The membership of an active member shall be transferred in accordance with the procedures established by the Secretary-Treasurer of the National Association. C. In the case of a retiree member seeking to transfer membership, they shall make application to the recording secretary of their branch, who shall ascertain from the financial secretary if all dues and assessments charged against them on that date are fully paid. If so, it shall be the duty of the recording secretary to announce at the next regular meeting of the branch that the application has been received and all obligations discharged. There being no objections, the recording secretary will at once forward to the recording secretary of the branch with which affiliation is desired a letter of recommendation. Dude, that's wild. So if somebody moves from one branch to another, the secretary has to announce it at the branch meeting. Did I read that right? Yeah, it shall be the duty of the secretary, recording secretary, to announce at the next regular meeting of the branch, hey, Johnny is moving to Ohio and he's going to join that branch out there. And so just letting you guys know that all his dues are paid. I don't think I've ever been at a union meeting where that has happened. But this is why we read these rules, isn't it? Because we need to know, like, the way we're actually supposed to do things. This rule is something that everybody voted on, or, you know, it became a rule for a reason, and I don't have the moral or the authority, the contractual or moral authority to overrule it. So somebody leaves the branch. I guess our branch secretary is going to be telling whether their dues are paid or not, you know, when they move out of town. All right, so anyway, the letter shall be read at the first regular meeting of the receiving branch held after its receipt, and the transferred individual shall be considered a member at that time. Oh, so there you go. Somebody moves to Las Vegas. We have to read out loud that letter that says, hey, Susan is a member in good standing, and she can be a member of this branch. Well, there you go. Add that to the duties at the monthly meeting. The recording secretary of the branch shall then notify the recording secretary of the original branch that the transferee has been received into membership. So there's this whole process, and I don't think I've ever seen it done. You know, and it's one of those things that it doesn't feel terribly important. Like, as long as the person's membership transfers over, who cares if you say it out loud at the meeting? But dude, I'm a rules guy. And if it says that this is the way we're supposed to do it, you know, again, I don't have the contractual or moral authority to override that. Who am I to say, like, oh, I'm not going to do what it says in the Constitution? That's stupid. That's not my place. My place is to make sure all this stuff happens. All right, Article 3, Meetings. Section 1, the regular meetings of the branch shall be held not less than once a month, at such time and places may be designated in the branch bylaws. Each branch, with prior approval of its membership, shall have the option of only meeting 10 times per year. So this is what we do in my branch. We have our regular meetings at the first Wednesday of every month. By the way, this one coming up on October 2nd, 2024, is when I will be nominated for I will receive my nomination for vice president. And it's exciting. I went out today and did campaigning for the first time. I stood outside of a station, and when the people were leaving, after they got off the clock, then I would stop them and hand them my literature, this nice paper that has our bios on the front and our platform on the back, and QR codes to the Spotify episode, or QR codes to the episodes where we talk about our platform and stuff. And it was well received. You know, I was way outside of my comfort zone doing something like that. I don't like to pressure people. I don't like to be a salesperson. But ultimately, I didn't have to. You know, it's just, hey, my name's Alan Gigax. I'm running for vice president. And, you know, here's this, and this is what it is. So another step. You know, we'll see. We'll see how the election goes. But that was kind of neat. All right. So anyway, next, Section 2. Special meetings shall be called by the president upon the written request of blank members, number to be determined by the branch, in good standing, or by vote of the branch, and notification of such meetings, stating the object of the call, shall be given the members by the recording secretary as directed by the branch or as required by the bylaws. So there you go. You can have special meetings. If you have to get together because maybe there's going to be route inspections in your branch and you want to have a special meeting over that, then there's a process by which those meetings are called. Section 3, no business shall be transacted at a special meeting other than that for which it may have been called. So if you call a special meeting to talk about route inspections, you're not also going to approve that you're going to give $500 to Sister Mary's Children of the Blind. All right, Section 4. The branch shall be called to order at the time prescribed in the bylaws if a quorum be present. So a quorum is the minimum number of people required in order to conduct business. It's part of Robert's Rules of Order. And what constitutes a quorum should be laid out in your bylaws. Section 5. In the absence of the president and vice president, any member in good standing may be elected to preside by a majority of those present. However, branches in their bylaws may designate one or more officers to preside in the absence of the president and vice president. So even if they're not there, you still have to have their meetings, and that's how you decide who's going to run the meeting. Article 4, Officers. Section 1, the officers of the branch shall be a president, vice president, recording secretary, financial secretary, treasurer, sergeant-at-arms, MBA representative, that's Mutual Benefit Association representative, a health benefits representative, and a board of trustees composed of either 3 or 5 members. The branch may provide for additional elective offices in its bylaws. Branches may provide in their bylaws for the inclusion of stewards on the executive board. So at my branch, we have an additional position of an executive vice president, and our stewards are not on the executive board unless they also happen to be one of these other members or one of these other positions. Section 2, all officers shall be elected for a term of 1, 2, or 3 years at the option of the branch, or until their successors are duly elected and installed. At my branch, it's 3 years. With the exception of the office of the president, which is expressly provided for in Article 6, Section 2 herein, branches may make provision in their bylaws for succession to the offices of all other officers in the event of death, resignation, disqualification, refusal, or neglect of such officers to discharge the duties of their office. If no such provision is made, the branch president may appoint the successor until the next regular branch election. All right, so in the Constitution, if the president doesn't fulfill their duties or they die or they resign or whatever, if they're no longer president, then the vice president takes over. Or in my branch, the executive vice president takes over. Anybody else, if they're gone, your branch can make bylaws that say, okay, if the vice president is gone, then the treasurer is going to take over, you know, or whatever. If that's not done, then the president just appoints somebody. Section 3. With the exception of the office of president, branches may consolidate the offices of the branch. However, if there are less than 10 active members, the office of the president may be combined with other offices. All right, so you could have a treasurer who is also the branch secretary. You could have a vice president who is also the branch secretary or whatever. This should be covered in your bylaws of how those positions may be combined. And then if you have less than 10 members, then the president can be multiple things as well. Section 4, branches at their option may require all candidates for office or delegate to be present at the meeting when nominated or signify in writing their willingness to serve if elected. That's the way it is in our branch bylaws. You have to either be present, which is certainly my plan, or signify in writing that, yeah, if somebody nominates me, I'm willing to accept that nomination. And I've been considering putting in my acceptance in writing just in case. You know, what if something crazy happens and I get into a car accident on my way to the meeting or something? I should probably put it in writing just to be on the safe side. Maybe somebody cuts my brakes on my way there. All right, Section 5. Branches having members in 2 or more stations may make provisions in their bylaws for station delegates, representatives, or shop stewards to be appointed or elected within the respective stations as the branch may be determined, and whose duty shall be to guard the interests of the branch in their particular station under the direction of the branch or its officers. So at my station, or at my installation, rather my branch, the stewards are elected. And then in between, if there's a vacancy, the local president is supposed to make appointments to fill those vacancies. As a matter of fact, we just had a conflict over that because at my station, I'm an alternate steward. I've been an alternate steward for a long time, and we've had a vacancy for steward. We have one steward, but we have room for two. So in our bylaws, one of the duties of the president is that he's supposed to fill any vacancies by appointment. And so I wrote to him recently and I'm like, hey, we've had this vacancy for steward at my station for like a year. What steps are you taking, or what steps have you taken to fill this vacancy? Because it's right there in the bylaws that he's supposed to fill the vacancy. And somebody I know has had their application in for that vacancy for a long fucking time. And I'll give you 2 guesses who that is. So that application has been just sat on for ages. And, you know, I guess that's his prerogative. But his duty is to fill the vacancy. So I asked him, hey, what are you doing to fill this vacancy? And he writes back to me that when it was a one sentence response, you know, there was an opening and a salutation, but in the middle, it was one sentence that when the executive board believes that someone is qualified, the position will be filled, which of course is just a direct insult to me because I'm the only applicant. And apparently they don't feel I'm qualified. So that was really something. So I guess that's why he's not fulfilling his obligation. So I wrote back to that and I'm like, hey, I take your insult, you know, I get it that you're insulting me saying that I'm not qualified or that the executive board, you know, he's passing the buck like, oh, it's not me. It's the executive board doesn't think you're qualified. So yeah, I take your insult. But what I actually asked you is what you're doing to fill the position, because that's your duty under the bylaws. And the next day there was a posting at my station asking for applicants to fill the vacant steward position. Good times. And then the posting had no deadline on it. And it just said, hey, we're looking for applicants. So I wrote to him again and I'm like, hey, obviously I'm interested in this position. So what's the deadline to get my application in? And he says, there is no deadline. Well, having no deadline is effectively identical to having an arbitrary deadline. So I went ahead and sent my application in. And things like what I'm doing right now, reading the Constitution to you guys, it was one of my qualifications. So we shall see if my application gets accepted. If I were a betting man, I would bet that they will not find any qualified candidates. Dude, the internal branch stuff, it's so frustrating. Like, I'm obviously trying to help the branch and help my carriers and be the best steward that I can be. And dude, I'm far from great at it, but I'm putting in that honest effort. And the fact that they just won't make me a steward, that they're just keeping me as an alternate steward, even when the bylaws say that you're supposed to fill these vacancies, you know, it's madness. And then I had a newer carrier at my station step up and want to be an alternate. Like, hey, I'm not ready to be a steward, but I'd like to start learning this process and be an alternate. So that carrier put in an application to be an alternate at my station, and they just sat on it. They wouldn't even make that carrier an alternate. And like, who benefits from that? Dude, there's a reason that I'm running for office in my branch. We shall see if I get elected. All right, Article 5. Oh, speaking of which, Article 5, elections. Section 1, the provisions of this article shall govern the election for all branch officers or other elected branch positions. Section 2, all regular members shall be eligible to hold any office or position in the branch except that a member who voluntarily or otherwise holds, accepts, or applies for a supervisory position in the Postal Service for any period of time, whether one day or a fraction thereof, either detailed, acting, probationary, or permanently, shall immediately vacate any office held and shall be ineligible to run for any office or other position for a period of 2 years after termination of such supervisory status. Upon nomination, the candidate must verify that they have not served in a supervisory capacity for the 24 months prior to the nomination. So this mirrors what's in the national part of the Constitution, that if you even sniff a supervisor, you are not welcome to be in branch leadership. Section 3, all regular members shall be entitled to one vote for each office or position to be filled. However, station delegates, representatives, or shop stewards may be elected only by the regular members within the station or area they represent. Branch stewards and any other persons who are members of the branch executive board or similar body must be elected by the entire branch, not just by the station or area they represent. So that's reasonable. If I were going to be running for steward at my station, which was my original plan, then only the people at my station vote for me. And that makes perfect sense. But now that I'm running for a branch-wide office, then the entire branch votes. Section 4, election of officers shall take place at a time prescribed by the branch bylaws. No less than 45 days before each election, the secretary shall mail to every member notice of the election, stating the offices for which election shall be had at the time, place, and the time, place, manner for nomination, and election. For purposes of this provision, the requirement that notices be mailed may be satisfied by timely publication of the notice in the postal record, or in state or branch publications that are mailed to the last known address of the member. I'm going to have to go back and look at our local union newsletter, because we're now a month out from the election, so we're within that 45-day window, and I know I didn't get something in the mail saying that elections were coming. I'll have to look in the postal record to see if this was actually done. I don't know. I don't remember seeing it, but that doesn't mean it's not there. All right, Section 5. A, every regular member shall have the right to nominate a candidate for any office or position to be filled. B, each candidate shall be nominated at a regular or special meeting of the branch not less than 4 weeks before the date of the election, but not less than 10 days after the notice of nomination and election has been sent out. Okay, so again, we're within 10 days. Like, it's a week from today that we're going to have these nominations. So where was the notice? I'm going to have to ask. All right. A branch may, however, provide in its bylaws that nominations may be made in writing, with the nominations to be received by the secretary not less than 30 days before the date of the election. C. Elections shall be by secret ballot. When there are two or more candidates for any office, the election shall be by ballot, and the plurality of all votes cast for such office shall be necessary to elect. Plurality is a mathematical term that means just the most votes. It doesn't have to be a majority. Like, if 100 people are voting, you don't have to get 51. You just have to get more than anybody else. So if there's like five candidates and candidates get 10, 20, 30, and 30 votes and you have 31, or I don't think the math on that works out. But whatever, whoever has the most votes, that's the plurality. It doesn't have to be a true majority. There shall be no write-in votes for candidates not officially on the ballot. Any such write-in shall not be counted, but will not invalidate the rest of the ballot. Each eligible regular member shall be entitled to one vote for each position to be filled. Where there is but one candidate for any office, the president may declare that such person has been elected. Adequate safeguards to ensure a fair election shall be provided, including the right of any candidate to have an observer at the counting of the votes and at any polling place. The election may be held at a regular meeting of the branch, or a branch may provide in its bylaws that ballots may also be cast at each station not more than 7 days, nor less than 1 day before the regular meeting, or that the election may be by a secret mail ballot. I believe that's the way we do it here, the mail-in ballot. Whenever such elections are conducted by mail ballot, the last date on which ballots must be received in order to be counted shall be considered to be the date of the election. The recording secretary shall preserve for 1 year the ballots and all other records pertaining to the election. Section 6. Installation of branch officers shall take place at the first or second meeting of the branch following the election and shall be by such ceremony as the National Association may provide. Any national officer, a past president of the National Association, a president or past president of a state association shall act as installing officer, provided that in their absence, any officer of a state association or the past president of a branch may act as such. So there you go. That's who puts you in as a branch officer. And thus ends Article 5. I have a whole book here, or it's a booklet, NALC Regulations Governing Branch Election Procedures. There's the book right there. And at some point, I plan to read that. I'm going to have to be making more episodes because I want to get through the Constitution, and then I'd really like to read that before it's time for my election. But we'll see. It's getting close, so I don't know if I'm going to get to it. Certainly not going to get to it if I keep rambling. So, Article 6, Duties of Officers. President. Section 1. The president shall preside at all meetings of the branch, preserve order, sign all warrants on the treasurer ordered drawn by the branch, and all other papers ordered by the branch. Have general supervisory powers over the branch. See that officers perform their duties. enforce the Constitution, bylaws, rules, and regulations of the branch. Now, see, this is where we're falling short, because I know that there's stuff in our bylaws that's not being enforced, and that's the president's job. Appoint all committees not otherwise provided for. Give the deciding vote when a tie occurs. Examine and announce the result of all balloting and other votes. They shall not make or second any motion or take part in any debate while in the chair. They shall ascertain from the... So this about being in the chair, this is a Robert's Rules of Order thing, that whoever's presiding over the meeting, their job is just to run the meeting. The content of the meeting, the decisions, the arguments, stuff like that, that's held by other people. So if the president wants to take part in that, they have to relinquish the chair. Somebody else becomes chair so that the president can do whatever it is they need to do. They shall ascertain from the financial secretary before adjournment of the meeting the amount of money received since the previous meeting, and from the treasurer if they have received the same. At the end of their term, they shall make a report showing the progress and condition of the branch. The president shall, together with the treasurer, sign and file with the secretary of labor on behalf of the branch an annual financial report if required by public law. The filing of such report will be required unless the branch has received express notification from the National Association that it is exempt from such requirements. The president shall, by virtue of their office, be the chief steward for the branch, and they may delegate such authority to other members. The president shall at all times have the authority to relieve any steward, whether appointed or elected, of any representational duties or functions, and to assign such duties or functions to another member appointed by the president. Whenever, here's the caveat, you can't just do this willy-nilly. Whenever the president concludes that such action is necessary to ensure that the branch meets its representational responsibilities or to ensure branch compliance with NALC policy. Those are the two reasons. Representational responsibilities. Are your members actually being represented by this steward? And NALC policy. Is this steward causing your branch to violate NALC policy, or is the steward themselves violating NALC policy? Those are the caveats laid out here in the Constitution. The president shall appoint one member or officer of the branch as a letter carrier political fund coordinator to educate the members of the branch so as to promote participation in the political fund established in Article 1, Section 5 of the NALC Constitution. And thus ends the duties of the president. Vice President, Section 2. The vice president shall preside in the absence of the president, and in case of death, resignation, disqualification, refusal, or neglect of the president to discharge the duties of their office, the vice president shall then perform all duties incumbent upon the president for the remainder of the term of office. That's how our current president became president, because our president, Glenn, died in office. So he became the president. However, a branch with an executive vice president may provide in its bylaws that the executive vice president shall succeed to the presidency, which is exactly what happened. That we have an executive vice president, and that's who it is. Recording secretary, Section 3. The recording secretary shall keep a correct record of the proceedings of the branch in a book to be kept for that purpose. They shall draw all warrants on the treasurer ordered by the branch. They shall notify applicants for membership in writing of their election or rejection, and members of their suspension, expulsion, or acceptance of resignation. They shall report to the National Secretary Treasurer immediately upon the suspension, expulsion, or reinstatement of a member. They shall attend to all correspondence of the branch and properly mark and file all papers ready for inspection at any time and notify the members of special meetings when ordered by the president. They shall make semi-annually a report to the branch showing the number of members elected, rejected, initiated, suspended, reinstated, withdrawn, and the number of deaths, giving the date of death. Also, the receipts, benefits paid, amounts expended, and amount on hand. Within 1 week after their term expires, or upon an earlier termination thereof, they shall deliver to their successor all books and papers, together with all other property of the branch in their possession. Up next is the financial secretary, Section 4. The financial secretary shall keep a record book showing the names of members, when admitted and place of residence, collect dues and all other monies due the branch, keep a regular account thereof, and at each meeting, or prior thereto, whenever the prompt payment of the national per capita tax or other necessity may require same, pay the same to the treasurer, take their receipts, and retain them as vouchers in settlement. They shall personally, or through duly authorized deputies appointed when necessary for each station, and who shall, whenever practicable, be the station delegate or representative selected or appointed to represent the station, solicit payment from all members in arrears, and on the day of an election and before a ballot taken, furnish the president with a list of members not entitled to vote. They shall semi-annually furnish the National Secretary Treasurer with the list of names of all the members of the branch in good standing and shall notify the National Secretary Treasurer monthly of the election of new members. Also those suspended, expelled, deceased, or resigned. They shall keep an account of all properties, investments, and funds of the branch, which at all times shall be open for inspection, and at the end of their term make a report and deliver to their successor in office, when qualified, all the books, papers, and property in their possession belonging to the branch. To ensure the faithful performance of their duties, the financial secretary and their deputies shall be bonded in any such in such amount and in such manner as the branch may direct. And now we move on to treasurer, section 5. The treasurer shall receive receipt for and disperse all monies of the branch and keep a regular account thereof. They shall pay all warrants drawn on them by the recording secretary voted by the branch and signed by the president, and have all accounts receipted upon payment of the same. They shall, whenever requested by the president, and at the end of their term, make a report showing their receipts, disbursements, and amount of money on hand, deliver their books, papers, and money to their successor in office, when qualified, And to ensure the faithful performance of their duties, they shall be required to furnish a bond in such sum as the branch may direct. Section 6 is the Sergeant-at-Arms. The Sergeant-at-Arms shall preserve order in the meeting under the instruction of the President. It shall be their duty to see that none but members are present at the meetings unless directed by the President or a vote of the branch. Section 7, MBA Representative. The MBA Representative shall perform such duties as the Constitution and laws of the MBA require. Again, that's Mutual Benefit Association. They shall, whenever requested by the President and at the end of their term, deliver any MBA monies in their possession, books or other papers, to their successor in office when qualified. And to ensure the faithful performance of their duties, they shall be required to furnish a bond in such sum as the branch may direct. Section 8, Health Benefits Representative. The Health Benefits Representative shall perform such duties as the Constitution and laws of the National Association of Letter Carriers Health Benefit Plan may require. They shall, whenever requested by the President, and at the end of their term, make a report showing their receipts, disbursements, and amount of money on hand, deliver their books, papers, and money to their successor in office when installed, and to ensure the faithful performance of their duties, they shall be required to furnish a bond in such sum as the branch may direct. Next, trustees. Section 9. The trustees shall examine and report to the branch the condition of the books of the officers at least once every 6 months. Compare the vouchers and records and see that they correspond with the collections and disbursements. They shall have custody of all branch property and shall perform such other duties as the branch bylaws may require of them. The Board of Trustees shall be known as the Trustees of Blank Branch Number Blank of the National Association of Letter Carriers of the United States of America. Additional duties, Section 10. In addition to the duties assigned to each officer, they shall perform other such duties as the branch may from time to time direct. And finally, Section 11, Bonding. Every officer, agent, shop steward, or other representative or employee of the branch who handles funds or other property of the branch shall be bonded to the extent required by applicable law. All right, guys, that is going to do me for today. I have other episodes I have to record. I have other stuff I have to get to, and I have campaigning to do. Oh, my goodness. So thank you all for listening, and I will catch you guys soon.